I think we probably should get started, just because I know Zoe Lofgren is going to have to leave, and the secretary also has some items on his agenda after this meeting. So he is prepared with full information and biographies of those who are here. He should be able to just slip in when he gets here and start participating in the discussion. Many of you know me. I'm Gloria Duffy, the head of the Commonwealth Club of California. And I'd like to welcome everyone here on behalf of the Commonwealth Club and also the Norman Y. Mineta International Institute of International Surface Transportation Policy Studies at San Jose State University. I'd like to welcome you to the heart of Silicon Valley, which is downtown San Jose, and to the Tech Museum of Innovation, which, as you know, educates people about the contributions of science and technology to our society. I thought we'd get started because Secretary Slater is a little bit late. He's flying over from Oakland to San Jose, utilizing the fastest mode of transportation, I guess. He'll be able to come and join us as soon as he gets here. What I thought we could do is go around and introduce ourselves to one another. We have a number of very distinguished guests with us, as well as the secretary who will be joining us in a little while. Let me say just a word about the purpose of this meeting. In Silicon Valley, as in virtually every other major urban area of the U.S., growth and the booming economy have caused transportation to rank in the top three issues, which the polls say are of concern to Americans. Typically on a par with education and healthcare. The purpose of today's roundtable is to bring some of our area's best technology minds and policy leadership to bear in exploring ways in which technology can be better applied to address the challenges the U.S. transportation system faces. Now, I want to explain to you that we are recording this program for potential radio broadcast on the Commonwealth Club's radio network. We also have a special guest, Larry Gersten, from San Jose State University and other affiliations. Larry is going to be having a conversation with the secretary a little bit later in the day, and in the process of describing what he's doing here in Silicon Valley, he's shooting really some background footage, not this whole meeting, but some background footage of this meeting to combine with his footage of the secretary later in the day. We have two distinguished members of Congress with us today, the Honorable Zoe Lofgren, who represents San Jose and is essentially the congresswoman from Silicon Valley and has been very up front in the Congress, out front in leadership in the Congress's ability to deal with technology issues, particularly related to the Internet. We also have the Honorable Jim Oberstar from Minnesota, who is the ranking minority member of the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. And overlooking us all, we have the Honorable Norman Y. Mineta, former chair of that same committee, longtime representative of San Jose in the U.S. Congress, and now senior vice president at Lockheed in Washington, D.C. With those brief introductions, what I'd like to ask everyone to do is to simply go around, introduce yourself, list your main affiliation in the transportation field, and then we'll go from there. Sir?
Thank you. My name is Bill Lange, and I'm Director of Navigation Services for Lockheed Martin, located here in Sunnyvale. And as you know, we are one of the major providers of the data and the signals that you use for specific products that you are involved with.
My name is Abdul Hanif. I'm with the NASA Ames Research Center here at Moffett Field. I'm responsible for managing their real estate and regional transportation issues.
I'm Craig Van Kessel. I'm with Alltrans. We do commute alternatives for the colleges, including San Jose State and all the community colleges here in the area, plus working with kindergarten through 12th graders, and currently are developing a GIS program where we can put the people within a quarter mile of the nearest transit route and do their whole plan for them.
I'm David Ismaili. I'm the director of West Valley College's Advanced Transportation Technology Center.
And I'm Larry Doms, the executive director of the Metropolitan Transportation Commission, which is the regional planning and, you might say, banking organization for the San Francisco Bay Area.
I'm Steve Berglund, President and CEO of Trimble Navigation, one of the early pioneers in GPS.
As Larry mentioned, Larry Gersten, San Jose State, and my specialty is public policy.
John Deary, and I'm CEO of Cybertrend International. We're developing a new lightweight automated transit concept, and we're testing the vehicle right now and a lot of its components at Alameda at the former Naval Air Station.
Neil Garcia Sinclair. I'm Vice President at Cybertrend International.
Donald Paul, I'm Vice President of Technology and Environmental Affairs for Chevron, which of course provides energy on a worldwide basis.
Congressman Jim Oberstar, Minnesota.
Nora Mineta.
Zoe Loughran, and welcome to my congressional district.
Thank you all so much for being here. And what I'll do now, some of you know Secretary Slater very well, but what I'd like to do for those who don't is give you a little bit of background about him. He is an Arkansan, a former executive assistant to President Clinton, and I believe he's here. So I will continue my. Isn't that great timing? I have to say,
for one, I don't know.
This is what we call great staff work. And I'll just pause and then introduce him once he comes in the room. As I mentioned a moment ago, we are just delighted to have with us today Secretary of Transportation Rodney Slater. And I was just about to tell you a little bit of background. So far, I had managed to say that you were an Arkansan, if that's the right way to pronounce it, and had been an executive assistant actually to President Clinton when he was governor of Arkansas. But just to go back a little further into your background, Secretary Slater was named Secretary of Transportation on February 14, 1997. As you know, the Department of Transportation oversees the nation's airports, highways, railroads, mass transit, and maritime resources. It has 100,000 employees and a budget of more than $40 billion, which also includes, by the way, the United States Coast Guard. Under his leadership, the Department of Transportation developed a strategic plan that Congress rated as the best among all federal agencies. He also worked with Congress and continues to work with Congress to increase investments in infrastructure in the U.S. Before becoming Secretary of Transportation, Rodney Slater was Administrator of the Federal Highway Administration. He was a member of the Arkansas State Highway Commission prior to that, from 1987 to 1992, and served as its chairman in 1992. And in addition to serving as executive assistant for Governor Clinton, he was the governor's special assistant for community and minority affairs and assistant attorney general in Arkansas. He is a graduate of Eastern Michigan University, has a law degree from the University of Arkansas, and an honorary doctorate from Eastern Michigan University. His other honors and degrees are too numerous to mention, but I should mention that he is married to Cassandra and has a daughter, Bridget. It's my great pleasure to welcome U.S. Secretary of Transportation Rodney Slater.
Thank you. First of all, let me say, Dr. Duffy, I really appreciate the opportunity to be here, to be in the company of these distinguished leaders of both the public and private sectors, many of whom I have met and worked with in direct ways over the years, and so it's a pleasure to be with all of you. We are looking forward to the discussion, so I'll just make a few comments to get into that. Let me also say, Congresswoman Loughran, thank you for opening the doors of your district and welcoming us. We've been talking about my coming to the district for a while, and so I'm very pleased to be here. And for you to have your friends here. Clearly, we still speak of Norm as a member of the Congress. He likes hanging around the Congress yet still.
And former mayor of San Jose.
That's right, mayor of San Jose and all of that. And he's here with his good friends. Congressman Oberstar, a pleasure to see you. We've been hearing a lot of good news about good things that we'll talk about as we as we go forward. But this is one of the most dynamic regions of the country and one of the most dynamic regions of the world. You are growing by leaps and bounds, and you are pulling together the kind of team to really make good things happen. You've got quite a distinguished delegation in the Congress. Your business leaders are leaders of renown, again, not only here but across the globe. Last week we were in Taiwan, and clearly there were many businesses from this region there participating in an international IT conference. You just really have a lot going for you. But you also face a lot of challenges. There have been many articles dealing with congestion in the region, many articles dealing with the power and the flow of the growth and how do you manage that, how do you continue to keep a quality of life that really drew that so many here early on, how do you maintain that in the years to come? Those are the challenges being faced by communities across the country. You continue to add to your team. Jeff Morales just came in. Jeff comes to you, really returns to you from Chicago by way of the Department of Transportation, and then before that working on the Hill with Senator Lautenberg. I think that you have a wonderful partner in Jeff and the leadership that he will bring to Caltrans, which will help you, I believe, continue to use the really great flexibility that exists in the law that governs our activities currently, T21. But we build there on the wonderful piece of legislation that I had coming into the Federal Highway Administration in 1993, ICE-T, which provided significant opportunity to flex dollars from highways to transit and vice versa. We ended up, though, flexing about $5 billion to transit. And then with T21, I remember with the leadership of your delegation and also Congressman Oberstar and the encouragement of Congressman Mineta, the president could stand firm along with the vice president in saying we will veto T21 if we don't get record-level investment for transit and highways alike. And so I think that all of these actions have been beneficial. We have been fortunate enough over the past 7.5 years see an 86% increase in investment in transportation over the previous administration. And we've had the full support of the Congress in that regard. But most of the measures that we've passed have been known as much as environmental bills or safety bills as transportation bills. I think that that says a lot about how we're starting to view transportation, and I think it's very consistent with ways that you have demonstrated positive uses for transportation here in this region and really throughout the state. And so we gathered then to discuss, to some degree, what we've done, but more importantly, to focus on what we have yet the opportunity to do as we look out across the horizon to the new century and the new millennium, as we stand really at the threshold of this century and millennium that beckons us forth. From our vantage point, we have the fine work of the Mineta Institute to guide us, along with that of the other university centers around the country. We have the fine products of the institute that you are graduating. Many of them we'll see this evening. And also some of the great professors who have served the institute. And here I mention Dr. Stephen Van Beek, who is now our head of intermodalism within the Department of Transportation and has served with distinction since joining the department. Also, Norma Cram, I'd like to introduce. Norma is our deputy chief of staff and has been with me as we've traveled around the country over the last week to lift up and to highlight the best examples of innovation in transportation. And that's really where I'd like for us to maybe begin the discussion, thinking about the development of a climate of innovation in the transportation enterprise community, where we seek at every turn perspective to view it from a different vantage point and to seek to offer more choices and new insights as relates to the enterprise. We think that if we approach it that way, then at the end of the day, we will naturally flow to the use of a new policy architecture for transportation decision-making, and that we'll get more involvement and more collaboration when it comes to making transportation decisions. And again, I think some of the finest examples of that kind of effort are here in this region. And Larry and Mr. Dearden, we thank you, the two of you for your leadership in that regard. But with that, let us just then think about a couple of questions. I mean, your businesses, your roles cause you to think about issues at the cutting edge. So as we think about transportation in the coming century and millennium, how are certain trends driving the environment and creating different and sometimes difficult choices for us? The aging of America, the strong baby boom era that is now upon us that really outnumbers the baby boom era that we are a part of. The use of technology, nanotechnology, those kinds of technological advancements, how do they speak to the future as we harness the awesome power of technology to enhance the capability, efficiency of the transportation system as we know it. Again, your businesses are at the cutting edge of the new economy. What are to be the gains? And how do we have to respond in the transportation arena so as to facilitate those gains rather than, find ourselves serving as barriers to those gains? But those are the kinds of just general issues we want to put out there. I guarantee you that as we end our discussion, you will find a desire and a need to continue the discussion. It has happened at every turn. We were just today in Oakland talking to individuals in the disability community and asking them how we might better partner with them to address some of their concerns. We were earlier in the week at the Franklin Institute in Philadelphia talking to high school students, and the response was the same. Time was running out, and we were there wanting to take more notes because the young people were offering insights that were, frankly, helpful to us. And so I'm sure that the same thing will happen today. And that's why I want to say at the outset, view this as the beginning of a dialogue and one that will continue as we do a couple of things, and I'll close with this. One is to put together a 2025 Trends and Choices report that we will complete a little later this summer, where we will collect the good ideas and put them in a very good and hopefully usable document for years to come. And then secondly, we will use the insights to help us work on our policy architecture issue, but also prepare for an international transportation symposium that we will host this fall in Washington, October the 9th through the 12th, where we'll invite, voices and leaders from around the world. And we think that clearly not only will the insights we gain from you be appropriate for consideration in that kind of an environment, because that's the circle you're in, a circle of international leaders in this enterprise, but also the examples that you have put in place, the models that you represent with your transit and transportation projects, many of them, will be the kind of best practices that we lift up and show people as examples of the system of the coming century. And so that's how we will continue to use the information that you share with us. And again, I just want to say thank you for giving us the opportunity to sit and visit with you. And with that, I'll just open it up and we can begin the process. Why don't we do this? As you offer comments, if you would just please identify yourselves so that we can get the right notes with the right individual, but also for purposes of the media here gathered, and then the fact that this is being recorded, I think that that will prove beneficial as we go forward. Okay. And then speak into the microphones. Well, we'll all speak into the microphones as we move forward. But let's just get into it. Yes, please.
Just from the standpoint of our development efforts, what we perceive is that their congestion is becoming like an irresistible force, in the sense that there's a political will to solve the problem, mm-hmm. but there's an irresistible force, or an immovable object, and that is the structure of the transportation industry. Mm-hmm. So our question is, how can, or what structures and processes exist that can encourage the development of innovative technologies that can somehow overcome this immovable object of, you know, existing industry?
Okay, very good. Now, we were touching, you should identify yourself.
Neil Garcia Sinclair.
Okay, all right, very good. Thanks, Neil. Well, clearly I can attempt to respond to that, but others, I think, should offer comments. We have actually tried to reorganize the transportation enterprise at a couple of junctures. I know early on during the administration, when there was a lot of talk about doing away with the Department of Transportation and other departments, and also at a time when we were seeking to reinvent government. And by the way, I think that effort has proven very successful, and the I think the Vice President has done a great job there. During the introduction, you heard that our performance plan and our strategic plan both have been recognized as the top in government. Well, that's everybody doing this, and it means that we are literally managing for results. And I think that is a positive outcome here. But we still have a modal structure within the Department of Transportation. One thing that we have sought to do, though, is to organize ourselves in ways that help us to deal with issues from a multimodal or intermodal perspective. And we have adopted a management philosophy that we call One DOT. There again, the objective is to get the collective minds of the department working through the Office of Intermodalism to a great degree to start to give us a much more dynamic consideration of issues and approach to the business we do. That's just one example of how we've done that. A couple of points to underscore how important that has been. We got together in 1997 across the department in a regional, for the regional administrators. And it was the first time that the regional administrators of the Department of Transportation had gotten together in the 30-year history of the department. And then in 1998, I believe, we hosted the first national transportation safety conference, and it was the first time that we had brought all of our national partners together as a department. We have only produced one annual report as a department, you know, like an annual report that deals with your performance. Now, that doesn't mean we haven't done annual reports. We've just done them by modes, but never across the department as a whole. We've done one now. We're going to do another at the end of this fiscal year, so at least we are trying to create some track record. And what happens is when you look at things as a whole, you can really see the enterprise in its full character nature, and it's much more dynamic. At the private sector and level, and Norm, I think others of you can really speak more to this, we have seen some reorganization as well. And I think actually companies like UPS and FedEx have been very helpful because at the end of the day with those companies, no one is concerned about how it gets there. You just place the order, and the next morning you expect it to be there. So I think that we're doing better here, but clearly we've got some challenges that we yet face. But that's just a quick comment. Let's see, Jeff, please.
Yes, Jeff Morales, I'm the new director of Caltrans. And Mr. Secretary, I want to thank you for doing my job in part because by pulling this group together, because this is a group I want to tap into the expertise of and resources of in doing my job. And you're talking about reorganization, and I think for us and for California, it's for Caltrans as a department, it's a reorientation, even more so than a reorganization, going from a shift from a history going back 30, 40, 50 years that was where the focus was almost exclusively on building new capacity, particularly on highways, to now a shift where our primary job is going to be managing that capacity, and that's a very different job. This state is growing and projected to grow by 500,000 people a year, which, and when you think about that, it's just incredible. We're adding, what, Wyoming or South Dakota every year is coming to California. And at the same time, there is very little ability to add whole new capacity, particularly in the freeway system and the road system. So the challenge becomes, how do we utilize what's out there? How do we get mobility? And that is where, you know, I think Silicon Valley is the place to look in terms of both the need to deal with that problem and the ability to deal with it in a way that blends what government has to do and what the private sector can do. Because the tremendous growth that's happened here in San Jose and throughout Silicon Valley, we have to be very mindful of what brought people here in the first place is going to change if we don't improve how people get around and how goods get around. And if congestion becomes too bad here, I dare say some of you will pick up and move somewhere else, and we don't want to see that happen. So we have a real responsibility to sit down together and, again, focus on a very different way of operating our department in conjunction with what people need in the state.
I'm Norm Manette, and I might just ask between Jeff and the Secretary, but I think what Neil has brought up is a very interesting subject, and that is the structure of the transportation industry itself sometimes prevents any kind of inclusivity of transportation modes, so that, as in the case of Caltrans, you've been building highways. Now, the governor comes out with a budget that says we're going to now go 50-50, highways and transit. But I wonder whether or not there isn't going to be a sort of a clash of cultures, much less modes, in terms of where we're going to go in the future. Congressman Oberstar has been strongly supportive of this whole issue of highways, transit, bicycles, whatever it might be that that interests you in terms of your own mode of transportation, whether it be including being a pedestrian. But sometimes I wonder whether or not there aren't forces that just keep things from happening.
Yes. Well, this is a good question, Steve.
Let's see what we have.
Following up what
I'm John Darian with Cybertran, and on the subject of resistance, and which one of the subjects is resistance between modes, but another resistance that we are seeing, the stage that we are in the development of our project, is We've been very fortunate in developing the technology up to a point where it's ready to commercialize. But what we see is a resistance, and to a point it is written into the regulations. For example, if you have a new concept, if it flies floats and costs nothing, if you tried to bid that into an existing project for transit in a city, one of the requirements generally in the bid process is it has to be in revenue service someplace. Now, if there was ever a catch-22 to keep out any technology, it's that one little thing. So you have to find a way around that. And the fact that present suppliers of nearly all of the present suppliers are foreign suppliers makes it very difficult for not only a new technology but an American technology to even get into the process because of that one little rule. And that's a policy as much as the other. There's experience level and convenience and comfort level with the existing industry and the existing technologies, and that's true with anything. But in the transit, it's a particularly onerous situation that new technologies face. Mm-hmm. So there is a way around it, and that is a demonstration project. Mm-hmm. And that's one way that the government and local communities that want to help break this impasse can, is put a demonstration project in some place, and then that gets around the issue of, is it in revenue service? Well, yes, and you can go take a ride on it. But if you can't get a demo, it's a very difficult situation.
Okay, very good. Let me acknowledge Dr. Heatley, who has joined us. And what we're doing, Dr. Heatley, is just having a discussion about our individual visions regarding the challenges we'll face 2025 and really in the interim moving toward that point in time.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, this is Donald Paul.
Yes, Don.
Chevron. Mm-hmm. And I guess I would like to maybe throw into the mix maybe a view from kind of the, I guess, quote, old economy sitting here in the middle of Silicon Valley. I think it's, as I would agree with you, Mr. Secretary, that you're kind of embarking on perhaps a new curve. And as you see in Silicon Valley, one of its great strengths has been it's created an environment in which there are literally thousands of experiments going on in order to find the right business that addresses the right market and goes forward. Mm-hmm. I think one of the challenges that you have in this area is how do you create an environment where there's enough experimentation that you know what the answer is? And that's one issue. The other issue, of course, is how do we proceed, as we have for quite a while, but basically continue down the curve toward a cleaner and more efficient what I would call performance from the vast bulk of the existing transportation system, which isn't going to disappear anytime soon. So I think you need to do both of those things. Mm-hmm. I think the challenge on the innovation side, of course, is that here in Silicon Valley, the reason you have so much innovation is primarily a sort of unique combination of entrepreneurs and startups and a tidal wave of venture capital. And one of the reasons you get investments is because the winners pay out enormously and very high rates of return. One of the challenges in this area is that any new transportation industry, if we're getting back to the industry, things, the people that make things, is going to certainly have to have much better rates of return than the existing manufacturers of transportation systems. And without mentioning names or getting into that, I was at a Bank of America security analyst meeting last week, and you can ask any security analyst what they think about that industry as a place to put investment money. So the challenge is, how do you get enough experiments, which I think are necessary to create the right combinations of technology and business and market? Because you can't just have one of those. You have to have all of those.
Right.
In a sector in which there is it's not clear whether there is money to be made. Because mm-hmm. that is the big contradiction between the challenge we're looking at here and what goes on in Silicon Valley, sort of out of the air. Mm-hmm. And so I guess that would be one of the perspectives that is a challenge to building the infrastructure in this area.
Those are good points. Let me just, before we proceed, since there were points and questions raised, and also I think, you know, Norm was putting a wonderful question to us as well about, you know, the fact that the structures do present barriers, and how do we get over and through that? We should come back to that, but I wanted to acknowledge it. But then, Don, on your point, you know, what I find interesting is that I just don't think that we have a full appreciation of the value of transportation. We generally don't focus on it until there's a problem. Generally, anytime we're in the news, like on a daily basis, I'm reading about problems for the most part. Seldom are we reading about issues. Now, one thing has happened of late, which is very interesting, and I think, Congressman Obersar, it has us thinking about issues, and that's in the aviation realm as we deal with all of the posturing for mergers. We've also seen that to a lesser degree in the railroad industry. But there is this realignment that's going on. Also, in the international context, there's a lot that goes on that's really under the radar screen, but with this United U.S. Airways proposal, even that has been thrust into the open. British Airways, KLM, some of the other alignments, especially in Europe. We would actually like – we've been visiting with analysts trying to figure out how we put the proper value on the enterprise so that then as you seek to enhance the – efficiency of the enterprise, you get into a question of whether there is some value, you know, in there to be tapped. You get into a question of the market of opportunity rather than the, you know, just the market share. You get into the market of opportunity. And we've just had a tough time. Even though you can point to the fact that 1 in 7 jobs is transportation related, that 11 to 14% of the gross domestic product is transportation related. Probably second only to our housing, you have the investment in transportation coming from family budgets. But we still haven't effectively put a price on it, which means that I don't think you can really value then or put a clear value on what an innovation potentially represents. I mean, now, I'm just stabbing at the question as you have raised it, because I think you've raised two very good questions. The first question dealing with experiments, I think that our laboratories could arguably be the states, and that maybe there we have to figure out how we bring a little more incentive to the process, because right now we basically provide funds through a formula. So you're going to get basically what you're going to get. And we have very few dollars that we can use to stimulate competition. And we may be able to look at that. Also, you know, on the innovation side, we may be able to put together a venture fund of some type. And I don't know exactly how we would fashion that, but we may be able to do something like that, and we may be able to do it in partnership with the private sector. We can think about that. But I think the states themselves and communities represent probably some of our best sort of laboratories for experiments. And one reason I travel around the country is to use the trip to lift up the best examples. But beyond that, even we have not figured out some way of promoting that in a way that that lifts it up, that says to the broader public, these are the quality projects out there. These are the things you should seek to emulate.
Jeff? I think the question goes even a little deeper in terms of the environment, mm-hmm. and it, again, gets back to what's here. If and it starts at the national policy level and then plays itself out throughout, in that if – if we want to build a new interchange, add a new lane, assuming we can get through environmental and other things, nobody bats an eye at spending $10 million. You know, and that will come right out of the formulas. Nobody will think twice about it. If we said we want to spend $10 million on some experimental technology to move people around San Jose, everybody and their brother is going to want their hands in it, looking at the cost return, you know, is it going to, what's the revenue source and things like that. And there's a fundamental difference in how investments are looked at that discourage innovation and experimentation at this point that we have to figure out how to get over.
Okay, very good. Yes.
Trans, and I think you hit on a point. Promotion is the basic thing. We've got to end the love affair that Americans, particularly Californians, have, and do something. When I was thinking, when you were saying that, something like Got Milk. There was something that came from the food people, and now it's part of American culture. We have to do something like that in transportation to make it more attractive. And part of the work that I do with my company is we're now going with schools. We're going to the community colleges here in the area. We're going to San Jose State. We're going to as low as kindergarten and putting together buddy groups where parents walk their kids to school, but we take their name and address, we put them into a system, a GIS system, and we tailor make it to the people. If they want a bicycle buddy, we can do that. And with the students, we actually found out over 4,700 students that live within a quarter mile of the VTA systems at De Anza College. What we did is then take those names, put the route that was best suited to them, and actually mail to them and said, did you know this is within a quarter mile? And it helped. And I think we have to start them young and get the culture turned around because, you know, we're all guilty of not commuting all the time and, you know, the carpool lanes. So I think we have to make it attractive and things that we've done in the past, like I did a thing called Dr. Traffic Jam, and it was doctor, give me the news, I got the cure for the traffic jam blues. And dressed up as a doctor, and my staff was a bunch of nurses, and we worked with Intel and Hewlett Packard. We met people at Caltrain and handed them little gifts. One day we gave them a stress brick made out of styrofoam. The next day we gave them a little first aid emergency commute kit, which was a couple of pieces of candy. But we were all dressed in hospital scrubs, and they loved it, and we had over 1,000 people attend our fair. So, I mean, America wants to be entertained. If we can do it some way like that and with the distinguished people, we've had the luck of working with the MTC and the manufacturing group. We're very lucky in this area to have people like this with us. But let's make it fun.
Yeah.
Let's make it happy. Let's make it, and you can do it nationwide. You know, you can experiment with us, like, you know, give me an electric car. I'll go everywhere. I'll paint that sucker.
Mm-hmm.
That's Minnesota talk.
I wrote down just before Craig began speaking, culture change, and I'll make some comments on other aspects later after others have spoken, but you're absolutely right about starting with youth. We have to change attitudes. This is the biggest challenge in transportation. As Jeff Morales said, it's easy to do another interchange and another lane. But when I said to our governor, to our state legislators in my district, if you don't build the North Star 70-mile commuter rail, don't look to me for another dime for highway mileage because I'm not going to authorize it. You can choke on your own traffic, and on your own pollution, and on your own absorption of farmland. You got to change the culture, and you got to start with young people, and we're going to do that in a few weeks with Secretary Slater, Secretary Riley, Secretary of Education, and Secretary of Health and Human Services, Donald Shalala, announcing a national Safe Routes to School initiative in a suburban setting and an urban setting.
Exactly. I'd like to be part of that.
Okay. All right.
We have a culture with 24% of children under the age of 15 are clinically obese, as determined by the Centers for Disease Control. 30% of adults in America are clinically overweight. And children 9 to 15 take 75% of their trips by car or bus. They are transportation challenged. And I thought this was a brilliant idea, and I launched it with
a group of bicycling organizations, and they said, oh, it's already been done in England. In a three-year initiative, well, that, I said, it's still a good idea, then. And the secretary said it was, too. But in 3 years in the U.K., with the Safe Routes to School laying out pathways, whether they're a raised curb or a marked passageway, and police patrols and parents participating, they transformed, that is, within 2 kilometers of a school, transformed habits. So much so that last year, more bicycles were sold in the U.K. than automobiles. In the Netherlands, nationwide, 30% of all trips into the center city, all trips into the center city are by bicycle.
That's right.
In Delft, it's over 50%. In many towns, are over 50%. Well, that's just, you're looking for innovation. You got to start with the most flexible minds, the young people, mm-hmm. who haven't been formed yet, and work on them.
That's a good point.
Identify yourself.
State my name. Better do that. Larry Gersten. The funny thing is, Mr. Secretary, that this culture change idea, which I wholeheartedly agree with, can be done and is done on a limited basis, despite the incredible pressure for us to value automobiles more than our children. A couple of years ago, I did a study for the manufacturing group and the Valley Transportation Agency here on the worth of the light rail system as it was going through areas that it had not gone through before. And the perception was that light rail would be disruptive, that people would want to walk away from light rail, that they would view it as a negative in the community, and that it would, in fact, lower the values of land. And what did we learn instead out of that study? That people not only valued light rail, who lived within a quarter mile of it, but they moved there for the light rail. They moved there for the light rail, not to get away from it. So that we normally consider a negative and intuitively something that's undesirable, in fact, is quite desirable. Mm-hmm. We don't have to even look to experimentation. We've got products already showing that, and it's a matter now of showing other people who are a little bit more doubtful that, in fact, it is the case.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good point. Good point. Yes, right here.
David S. Smiley, West Valley College. There was a recent study in Texas that showed that adding highways didn't improve traffic. It actually made it worse. Going back to perceptions that people have, people think, oh, new lanes, more space for me to drive. So what happened was there wasn't a standard quo. There was actually a major increase in the number of people who were using their cars on those freeways.
Mm-hmm. Those are very good points. You know, on that point, we basically think that we have to build a system to accommodate rush hour traffic, which means that, you know, now one problem there is that the rush hour period is extending, and we've followed that. But the point is, we take those hot periods of the day and we try to build to that demand. And you cannot keep up with it. And then over the course of the day, you've got all of this that's there, and there's very little use being made of it. The same with aviation. We try to press everything into a given period of time, and then over the course of the day, you've got this system that's there that's not being used. We're challenged in that regard as well. And it goes back to the question of management. How can you best manage or better manage what you have? I saw a few other hands.
Well, yeah. We'll come back. I mean, we're in this area. We're innovative already. Craig Van Kessel mm-hmm. with AllTrans. There's a myself, Abdul, and Dave belong to the Association for Commuter Transportation. We have our headquarters in Washington, D.C., but we represent the northern chapter. And there's a member that works with several groups, private industry, such as Sun Microsystem. What she did is she went to one of the cities, got the bikes that they're going to be thrown away or auctioned, painted them all yellow, and now the employees, instead of getting in their car, going from one building to the next, ride a bike. And it's an honor system. They pick it up at one building, they ride over the next, they leave it in the front in a bicycle rack. Now, there's an employee comes out and they want to go someplace, they jump on the bike. So there's a lot of things that are taking place in this valley because we're a very creative valley. But what we need to do is get them all together and work on the national level and say, okay, let's make it throughout the United States, because you're not going to have the same problem in Silicon Valley that you are in North Dakota or South Dakota. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say that. So I think I'm excited with this group because from the ground up we can build something and start them young, like you said.
Yes, yes. And we're excited about this project, by the way. This is going to be a good one. Okay, we've got some people we haven't heard from, so we want to get your voices. And then we're going to come back to Steve here. Yes, please.
My name is Abdul Hanif. I'm from NASA here at Moffett Field.
Yes.
What we would like to offer is, as a federal entity or agency here, is to invite other organizations here to come and test if they have any products or transportation studies that we can move traffic more efficiently, smoother in this area. We are at Highway 101 and 237 at one end, and 101-85 was the north end. And we have a lot of potential to offer other regional organizations here to see how we can implement ITS or ferry systems on the bay and see how we can move all this traffic more efficiently and provide in this area more public transportation rather than having solo drivers. We have enough solo drivers anyway. We have 70% of people driving solo. So we need to increase that number of people taking public transport. I at NASA have a success story also. It took us over 21 years just to open a bike path. And we moved from 80 bicyclists a month to over 200 people coming to our center by bicycle. I did some studies as to how much fuel we have saved just over this period. And it's just amazing. Same thing with our NASA shuttle. When we started, we had very few people using it. Now we have three buses and over 3,000 people a month just using it to go back from the Mountain View Caltrain station to our center. So just one person myself, I ran this program, and it has become very successful. And I would like to, you know, request other companies that are in this area to take advantage of a federal agency in this area and come to us and share your expertise with us so we can grow and develop a more efficient transportation system in this area.
Very good. That's a great invitation. So I think you're going to have some takers, too.
In fact, I'd say we talked just before the meeting, and this is a potential solution to this impasse that I mentioned. So there are opportunities if we can just get the right mix together, and we will be following up on it. So we may be calling together at your office.
Okay, that's very good, very good. Why don't we just yes, Bill Lynch. Lockheed Martin.
I would just like to elevate this discussion possibly maybe about 40,000 feet and address the issue associated with air traffic management. As you know, we have three major airports within a 50-mile radius of probably where you are right now, and on your journey here, you did experience at least two of them, I would suspect. Would like to know your thoughts with regards to the congestion issue and what impediments that are perceived by the FAA under your organization to making air traffic management more efficient, such as WAS.
Yes. Well, clearly, we've got our challenges there that we share, frankly, with you. I think that on this score, Administrator Garvey has a pretty good handle on it. Basically, what she's decided is that we would break down our bigger vision into more digestible chunks, I'll say it that way. With the ultimate objective of, you know, having the highest level of technology in use possible. And a couple of our really tough areas of the country are clearly out west on the coast and in the northeast in particular. And really you could say throughout the east, but the northeast in particular. You know, I think that we have moved forward pretty aggressively on this. We actually used the Y2K challenge to move forward in a more expeditious fashion on some of our investments, the host system and some of our other investments. We have gotten good resources from the Congress with the most recent reauthorization bill, and you know, and we're very thankful for that, because we had gone for about 3 years without a reauthorization bill. We were basically going on an annual basis, and you really need long-term resources to really play this out. I think that we will continue to be challenged in the appropriation process. I mean, I know I'm focusing a lot on the money, because I think, frankly, the technology is there. It's just a matter of getting it off the shelf and getting it into use. And you got to have resources to do that. But I think we've got a good plan there, and I think she's put together a good team for dealing with it. It is imperative that we address this question forthrightly, because we're moving about 650 million passengers now. At the time of deregulation, roughly 20 or so years ago, we were moving about 240 million passengers a year. And we are slated to move a billion annually in less than a decade. And so we've just got to address this. Actually, the EU is faced with the same kind of challenge, the European community. And I do think that there may be some ways for us to coordinate our activities there. When you put our two markets together, we probably account for, Congressman, I'm looking at you now. I got out here on this point. Probably 60?
About two-thirds of the world.
Okay. Well, then even more of the world travel. And so we mentioned the Europeans because we were recently in Prague, and this was a big discussion from their vantage point. They also have started to try to put in a plan for the summer dealing with delays, because they had the worst year last year, as did we, dealing with this question. So I think we've got a lot of work to do there, but we've got great companies helping us, and Lockheed Martin is one of them. And there are others, Raytheon and clearly other companies out there. But this is a big challenge, big challenge.
One of the biggest perceptions is that there are big bottlenecks in air transportation. Yeah, okay. Jim Oberstar again. That says that the FAA hasn't moved ahead, and that every time there's a delay, it's FAA's problem. The fact is that in the last 7 years, more progress has been made in modernization of the air traffic control system than in the history of aviation. Of the 57,000 pieces of technology that operate the air traffic control system and are slated for modernization, 50,000 are in place. Most of that has happened in the last 7 years. And the FAA installed a voice switching and control system, which is an automated digital ground-to-air radio communication system, over one weekend. $1 billion system was done over one weekend without shutting down the air traffic control system for 1 second. That's the equivalent of changing a tire in your car at 60 miles an hour. The technology to manage air traffic at altitude, which is the 21 en route centers, the display system replacement technology, is now virtually complete. There's just one last center, that is Chicago Center at Aurora, Illinois, that now has the capability, with equipment that once occupied a room three times this size, now about the size, all of it put together, be the size of this table, gives the controller the ability to know where every one of the 27 aircraft in his or her sector at rush hour, to know where those aircraft are going to be 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes from now, and to be able to move aircraft around with the push of a button.
enormous improvement in safety, ability to have closer in-trail separation than in the past because aircraft are more manageable. The standard terminal automation replacement system for the TRACONs, that manage aircraft on approach to airports, is the hardware is complete. The software is nearing its completion of the test and evaluation procedure. The first two of this, again, billion-dollar system, 1.3 million lines of computer code are installed. They're going through their final test and evaluation and acceptance procedure, and that will mean the 584 TRACONs of this country will be able to have that equipment installed within the next year and a half. The perfection of precision approach through the wide area augmentation system with the satellite ground correcting station system has encountered a number of technological problems simply because this system is trying to get technology so that aircraft can land within 2 centimeters of the center line of a runway. That has proven to be a little bit more difficult than private sector and FAA initially estimated. But I see the challenges for aviation in the future to be redesign of the air traffic control system and the host and oceanic system that is managing air traffic over the Atlantic and the Pacific. Let me deal with that first. Over the Atlantic, the United States, under international agreement, is responsible for 3 million square miles of the Atlantic airspace and 18 million square miles of the Pacific airspace. The Atlantic is a $28 billion market for the United States, and the Pacific now is a $22 billion market for the United States. It's our responsibility to improve management of air traffic in those two airspaces. And the hardware has been developed for management of air traffic in those two sectors, but the software has proven more difficult to develop. We now have in-trail, that is, aircraft spaced up to 100 miles over the Atlantic and as much over the Pacific. When this technology is completed, you'll be able to have 50 miles separation or even less, depending on size of aircraft and atmospheric conditions. But the FAA is working on it. And under the Secretary's leadership and under the President's leadership, we'll put money into these programs to get there. The next thing that we have to do for aviation is to rebuild our air traffic control management system, which is still based on radio beacons developed in the 1930s and lighthouses, which were the first air traffic control guidance systems. We still have zigzags, and we need to straighten that whole system out, and that will be the most painful thing that any future Secretary of Transportation, if it's not Secretary Slater, is going to have to deal with. Because that's going to mean uprooting thousands of jobs from members of Congress' districts, and that's going to add a lot of pain. But it has to be done, and it's got to be started.
Yes. Okay. Yes, Steve.
I'm on Obama.
Steve Van Beek, DOT. I want to pose a question, sir, and just make a comment. I think this valley, with the projected growth rate, is going to have, despite billions of dollars that have been provided, unmet large transportation needs, regardless of how many dollars DOT provides as the lead. But one thing that this area has been very responsive to is that business has put money into transportation. If you look at the commuter rail over Altamont Pass, for instance, and the subsidies that are provided to riders. On our hand, DOT has more, thanks to Congressman Overstar, authorities in the area of innovative finance, and we have regulations now that get us out of the old world where we could not partner with the private sector. And so what I would like to just put on the table is, given the unmet need we're going to have, given the willingness of people here to partner, and given our willingness to partner, what are some of the innovative programs that we can put in place in the valley? and what should be our priorities to move forward in the innovative area to fund projects that won't be funded out of formula funds, but where we can put in some money and private industry can put in some money and share the responsibility.
John Deering with Cybertrend. A possible solution to that goes back to my initial statement that we need a process to bring about new technologies. And the reason I say that is this particular technology that we're working on is projected to be able to be built for like between 25% and 50% of existing rail transit costs. So that hits as an opportunity in two areas. For instance, I think the latest number on the DOT transit formula applications, there's like 300 on your desk, of which you probably have funding for 12 or so. That means that like 288 are going to have to go home empty-handed. If you can cut the cost of these new systems down, you can either save money or you can finance three or four times as many. So there is a return, a leveraged return, if you have a policy for bringing this technology to date. And right now, we seem to be hamstrung in our ability to even take advantage of what clear potential savings. So we continue spending because we have a formula for that. Mm-hmm. But we don't have a formula for investing in something that could potentially save us literally billions of dollars. Mm-hmm. So
let me be clear and just pick up on that point. We do have a policy and we do have funding for it. We do have programs. It's not the Secretary's fault. The fault is with the Appropriations Committee in the Congress. The Appropriations Committee is insistent, both the House and particularly the Senate, on earmarking those dollars and designating them for specific projects in their district that have nothing to do with a national policy. The Secretary's hands have been tied. He has not been able to do what the law, which we wrote in T21, allows him to do, to designate those dollars to truly innovative initiatives like you're talking about. But he has the authority, but he doesn't have the money because it's being taken right out of his hands.
I realize that in the T21 bill, there is that capability, but somehow in the full circle of government, we have not been able to implement that. And it seems
and that'll change under Chairman Oberstar.
Let me be clear about one thing. What we're talking about, there are cost savings and efficiencies that can be made in the process, and certainly from a national system point of view, earmarking is bad on the allocation side. What I'm specifically talking about, though, is expanding the pool of money available for transportation. And we have enormous discretion there, as exemplified by where the Secretary was earlier this week on the Alameda Corridor, where we used a $400 million loan guarantee to leverage a $2.5 billion project, which is basically funded by a bonded $30 a tax on containers in the future to generate net value in the present. And the question is, in using tools of innovative finance and co-mixing public and private money for unmet transportation needs, what is it that we can do in the Valley to add, in a sense, capacity and resources into this area? And who should be our partners?
Mr. Secretary, I was intrigued by your statement that, and I think it's extremely important when you're talking about massive infrastructure investments extending over decades looking forward. And, you know, one of the things I think that people that live in this area see on a day-to-day basis is that their whole concepts about the rate of change and what society, how society adjusts to them is, I think, a particular challenge. So without designating an answer, 25 years looking forward at the current exponentially growing rates of change is going to be a challenge. You know, you think about what has happened in the world as a network. Nobody thinks anything about it now. But 5 years ago, nearly invisible. And I think it would perhaps be interesting also to draw insights from those people who actually probably envision a world whose sociology and infrastructure is so radically altered that some of the discussions we have are transportation will always be relevant, but they might have to be put in a context. I would certainly predict Silicon Valley will look absolutely nothing like it does today in 25 years. So I think the real challenge when you start trying to plot this trajectory, and I think it's human nature, and every organization does it, they try to steer from where they are. When it comes to the world that's in front with respect to networks and biotech and all of these things, I'm not sure you're going to intercept the target.
Secretary Norman, I'd like to ask, if I might, Steve Berglund, is there a Moore's Law as it relates to technology and transportation? Can we utilize technology to sort of take elements of Moore's Law of doubling the capability of chips in a given period of time? Is there somehow we can use technology in order to make some of these advancements in transportation that we ought to be making?
Thank you, Norm. You're a good director. I'm Steve Berglund from Trimble. Listening to all of this, is we're operating at Trimble at a slightly different level. We're operating at a micro level. And our basic premise is that three things coming together create new solutions, which is position, which has a lot to do with transportation, wireless communication that enables a solution to be passed and forth seamlessly, and then information technology, call it a database accessible by the web. And now this has profound implications for many people in this room in terms of tracking whether it's Alzheimer's patients to individual delivery vans. But I think dealing with the Norm's premise here a little bit is I think that looking at the next 25 years, is there is a profound change coming for American industry that is not yet understood, which is if you look at either the number one cost or the number two cost for most American industrial companies, new economy or old economy, what you see is the distribution channel consuming most of the costs of the company. That is going to radically change in the next 20, 25 years. There's going to be the ability to rewire that entirely. Now, it's going to be painful. It's going to be painful for manufacturers. It's going to be painful for the existing distribution channels. But it has to do with web-enabled capabilities. Call it B2B or whatever, but essentially whole channels are going to be wiped out and replaced. Now, that is, in one sense, in cyberspace, but there's also going to be, I think, a profound change in terms of the how goods are moved from place to place, where goods are produced. Warehouses disappear to be replaced by something else. So there's, I think, a very profound change coming in to industry just in what has to be transported from place to place. So I think that there is the ability here to not just look at adding infrastructure to take to absorb the growth, but looking at much more efficient manners to move those goods. And again, I think that that's going to be information enabled, but again, I think from our perspective, position, which enables a vehicle to be identified and directed to the right spot real time, that's going to be a very important element. So I think that there, whether it's as profound as Moore's Law, I doubt if it is as profound as that, but I think that the enablement of vehicles, both from an industrial standpoint in terms of rewiring the distribution channels that exist in this country, but then also just the day-to-day patterns of individual automobiles or individual commercial vehicles, knowing where they are, where the traffic difficulties are. This whole area of telematics becomes a factor of using the existing infrastructure much more intensively. So it would be our corporate view that there is a profound change available and that we can enable it through technology.
Okay, very good. Let me just say that this is, I told you we would get to this point. We've got two hands. We're going to take them because we're going to press the time just a little bit. But actually, the whole discussion here is about collapsing time and collapsing distance. And some would argue that really the more sustained power and application of the overlay of IT technology on the broader economy as we know it may in fact be realized in your brick-and-mortar companies that become more efficient. And you probably cannot find a better enterprise that touches all of the industries more than probably this and communications, I would think, transportation and communications. And both go to the whole question of logistics, distribution, and the like. But not, individuals in the transportation community don't talk like this. And this is the new language that we have to start using. This is the new culture that we have to start producing. But we just put a pin in that, Steve. Thank you for getting us there. Okay. Let's hear the two comments here. And then.
Good afternoon, Kathy Heatley.
Yes, Ken.
I'm CEO of Outreach. We are a nonprofit provider of ADA transportation here in the Valley, as well as I have one of your job access welfare to work grants. I'm honored to be next to Norm that helped me get my original FTA grant several years ago. We have a highly successful ITS project that happens to be running Trimble equipment. Very highly reliable GPS is going to like coming back here. But it was really critically important. We are facing the largest age wave on the planet. And right now, this generation I serve, I'll do a million rides next year, have been very gracious with me. We are using ITS. We have documented findings on what we can save. But this next generation of you and I who demand instantaneous answers, I am now looking at additional wireless communication to come into my system and on my vehicles. And I'm a community provider. What I have here in the Valley, there are willingness of companies to come and work with me. But what I also have to match, I have to bring the county, I have to bring VTA to the table, then I have to look for you folks for some additional funding. And that what I really need is the timeliness of decisions, the flexibility. I'm kind of the middle of the Oreo. I can do business with everybody in this room, but I need flexibility. And so that is my piece in this, is that the growing ADA population, and now with Welfare to Work, we've been up for a year. There's a tremendous demand now to find out how low-income, poor children and children of welfare mothers, once they take the mom to work, are going to be picked up in the afternoon and taken somewhere else. So I have another grant in. These are huge problems facing the communities. So okay. Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you. Very good.
Welfare to Work provision of T21 and delighted.
Okay, very good. Yes,
well, I'm going to let John.
Okay, John. Okay.
I wanted to, John Darien with Cybertran, I wanted to add a little bit to Steve's vision on that. The one thing that I think, if you want to take a grand vision and look for transportation in the next 25 years, look at where it fits in a lot of other human endeavors and how they sit. The four main things that humans do is we eat, we live, we communicate, and we move. The first three of these in our modern age have nearly become transparent. In other words, how they happen is just, we just don't pay any attention to it. We don't participate actively in the food that we grow. We don't build our houses out of logs and caves anymore. And when we communicate, for the most part, whether it's a landline or a cell telephone, we pick it up and push the button, and we talk to someone literally anywhere in the world, and whether it goes by wire or cable or satellite, we don't know and we don't care. But the transportation industry, practically every aspect of it, we are still very much involved in it, from the traffic jams to getting your tickets. So if you want a longer range view of what we should be striving for, how do we make the transportation aspect of our lives transparent, where I want to go there. So somewhere I go, push a button, and sit back and read my paper or do whatever, and I am there. That's transparency, and that's a goal that we could look toward.
Good point. I also like your point about using looking at transportation through the prism of your view about other things that you know are moving at a much faster rate. Then you can understand probably better how transportation interfaces with that, because it's really an enabling force. I mean, that's basically what it is. And in the past, we have talked about mobility, but at its core, it's really a question of access. I mean, the value is in the access, not necessarily in the movement. I think in the past that we have focused more on the value being in the movement itself. And that's why we've been able to say, oh, that neighborhood and that neighborhood, you know, the value is in the movement. Their interests become secondary, you know. That's the way we've cut that decision for a long time. And then we got to a place where we decided we weren't going to do any harm. But I think that there is a place to go where we actually enhance the environment. And I think we're getting there as we cut the waste out of the system that currently exists, you know. Any other thoughts? This is very good. Well, why don't we do this? Why don't we close off the conversation for the moment? But we would like for you to continue think about what we have discussed here, and probably your own thoughts will become more crystallized as we go forward. And if your thoughts do become more crystallized, share those with us. And know that we really want to hear from you. I shared with the staff at the beginning of the year that I thought we could do as much this year as we've done the last 3 years combined. And they kind of looked at me on that score. I think we're getting there, because my point has been it's not the individual things that we do that I think really captures the value of what we do. It's the process we put in place, or the processes that we put in place, that help us to get to better decisions. And frankly, I think you probably know a job best when you're moving to the next. And since we've got a few more months here, we're going to make sure that we don't waste what we have learned over the last 3 years doing things as we've done them over the last 3 years. We're going to try to see if we might use what we've learned through an interface with others to give us a better insight about doing things in the future, even though we will actually pass that information and understanding on to others. You say, who will continue to carry the leadership process forward. This has been very, very good. And, Jeff, you're the lucky one here. You're starting your experience with this kind of session, and I think all of you should take Jeff take him for what he said, I think, with all sincerity, and that is he's been warning to have such a meeting as this one, and to do it so early in his tenure gives you an advantage too. I mean, this is someone you're going to know, and who is going to know you throughout his service, and he could easily be with the contractors or with any other traditional group starting his experience, but he's here with you, and I think that's something that's very, very good. So with that, I'll come back to you, Dr. Duffy, and just say thank you again.
Well, I'd like to thank you, Secretary Slater, for leading such a stimulating discussion, particularly on a Saturday. I thank you for being here with us in San Jose and Silicon Valley. Thank Congressman Mineta, Congressman Oberstar, Mr. Doms, Mr. Morales, all of our industry representatives. We're particularly glad to see Steve Van Beek here, who is a friend of our, many of us here locally in San Jose. And I want to flag the fact that we didn't quite answer his question about government industry partnerships. And just to put it to all of us to keep thinking about that and get back to our friends at DOT about that. I'd like to thank our co-sponsors, the Mineta Institute. Rod Diridon is here, the director of the Mineta Institute. And thanks to the Tech Museum for hosting us in this lovely location. To our staff, Pat Compton, Jim Copeland, for spending the day here on Saturday and getting this organized beforehand. So to all, thanks, and good day.